second thing we were gonna talk about was cigarette smoking, and let me talk about cigarette smoking, but talk about it because of the negative aspects of cigarette smoking.
Just cigarettes, not tobacco, not cigar or tobacco?
Really any tobacco, but mainly cigarette smoking.
Why the difference?
What's
the difference between cigarettes and cigars?
Okay, well, I'll talk to you.
Okay, I wanna hear that.
I said that the positive aspect of this habit was the decision not to take it up as a habit. That's the main thing. And the reason that I ranked that number two is because of the widespread effects that it has on the body. Now, what are the effects of cigarette smoking on the body? Number one, it replaces, you have a certain number of red blood cells. These red blood cells normally are carrying oxygen to your tissue. When you start puffing on a cigarette, you start exchanging the oxygen that these red blood cells are carrying for carbon monoxide, which is a toxic substance for the body. So you're replacing oxygen with carbon monoxide. Your body responds to the fact that the bloodstream is carrying less and less oxygen by trying to produce more and more red blood cells, and more and more the red blood cells become tied up with carbon monoxide. So you've already cut the delivery of oxygen to all the tissues of your body by cigarette smoking, okay? That's one of the major effects. The other thing is that you're inhaling a tremendous amount of pollution into your lungs when you suck in on that cigarette. This, first of all, the smoke changes the normal lining of your respiratory tract. If we took a cross section of your bronchus or your large breathing tubes here, it would look somewhat like this here. It has what we call tall columnar cells, which have a hair growing out of it that's sticking into the cavity. You got to realize that your tree is comes down and goes like this and then breaks off like this. So this is what, if you took a cross section on all of these things right here, this is what it would look like. So that air which is coming down through there is normally filtered. It's first filtered in your nose or in your mouth to a minor amount, but the main filtering takes place right down in here. And if you're breathing the dust from the hill over here or something like that, most of that dust is caught by these hairs. They have a sticky-like substance on them which attracts these particles and catches them. These hairs are constantly beating and they bring it up to the surface and you unconsciously swallow it and it goes down into your GI tract and is discharged from the body without causing you any harm. These cells are killed off by cigarette smoking. And the tree then goes to what we call a squamous cell, which is a flat cell here, which has no hair-like projection on it, and so you have totally destroyed the filtering mechanism for your lungs, the thing which cleans out all of the impurities in your lungs. So now all of that material that you're breathing in, and when you're breathing in on a cigarette, you're breathing in a tremendous amount of pollution, is going out into your lungs. Your lung is composed of billions of tiny little air cells here. These little air cells are one cell in thickness around the outside, and this is to facilitate the transfer of oxygen back and forth. Your bloodstream is bringing to the lungs carbon dioxide, which the body has produced as a byproduct of normal metabolism and is wanting to get rid of. The red blood vessels, as they course through the walls of these tiny little air cells, will give off their oxygen to the blood, will take the oxygen from inside of the alveoli, or these little air cells, and will give up the carbon dioxide so that it can be expelled from the body as you breathe out. When you are cigarette smoking, you have this tremendous amount of pollution which is coming down here unimpeded at all because you've destroyed your normal filtering mechanism, and this is building up in these tiny little air cells. As this builds up in the air cells, acids begin forming as a byproduct of it, and that starts destroying the wall. And so you start breaking down the tiny little air cells, and you get bigger cells here, bigger cells, and bigger cells, and bigger cells, and pretty soon you have what we call emphysema. Where you've had billions of little tiny air cells, you now have lost significant numbers of them, you have large holes in your lungs.
If the hairs, I smoked a long, long time ago, quit in 1948. My hairs were destroyed. Did they build back again, or did they stay that way all the time?
No, they will come back over a period of time, okay? If you stop your cigarette smoking, then your body will start trying to remove these impurities from the lungs, and you will start producing these again. But it takes a long time.
Hopefully not any more than 31 years.
Yeah, you would probably notice if we were to section through your lungs and look at this for probably a year, it'd take a year or more to develop the normal architecture again. So that's restorable there, but this destruction that's been done in the lung out here is not restorable, and you're stuck with that the rest of your life.
I had a test for how much breathing capacity there was, and the doctor said I'll let you smoke it one time.
Mm-hmm. So you already had lost some function of your lungs, you see. Now, if you're a cigarette smoker and you have a breathing test which will tell you what your function of your lungs is while you're still smoking, then you quit smoking, you come back a year later, the chances are that you will go back towards the normal level, but you will not go completely back. And for the person, of course, who has emphysema and is tied to the bottle, he is never going to go back to anything. So is there any question on that? Then we also know about the fact that cigarettes are cancer related. The fastest growing cancer in America today is lung cancer in women. And it's increasing at a rapid rate and coming up to the level of men. So you women who've been emancipated and have taken up the habit, you're going to have your own special brand of cancer along with us men too. Other effects of cigarettes. If you want to retain your youth, cigarettes have been shown to increase the wrinkling of the skin and aging of skin. Another significant thing that's coming out now is that the mother who smokes while she's carrying her baby is already affecting the arteries of her child, so that he or she has a predilection toward the development of atherosclerosis. And somebody mentioned secondhand smoke. Secondhand smoke is very significant. Just before I left Spokane, I had the unhappy experience of informing a patient of mine that she had cancer of the lung. She had never smoked a day of her life. Her husband had been a heavy smoker, and he right now is tied to an oxygen bottle with severe emphysema. But she has cancer of the lung. And I hated to tell her that the possibility was that she may have, just because of her exposure to her husband smoking, she may have developed the disease. 85% of cancers of the lung are in people who smoke cigarettes. The other 15% are people who are exposed to things like asbestos and other impurities, or there may be some genetic reason that they develop. But 85% of lung cancers are caused by cigarette smoking. And that, in men, is the number one cancer in men, and is rapidly increasing in women. Anybody else want to contribute anything towards cigarette smoking?
Did you answer the question about the difference between
cigars
and cigarettes?
Okay. Cigars and pipes and chewing tobacco are associated with a much higher incidence of cancer of the mouth and cancer of the tongue and cancer of the throat, but not with usually with cancer of the lung. And the reason for this is people who smoke cigars and smoke pipe usually don't inhale, so they don't usually get those impurities out in the peripheral areas of the lung, but they do get it in their mouth, where it has its effects in the floor of the mouth and on the tongue and things of this nature.
At what point does smoking become a narcotic effect upon the person?
Usually at about 2 months along. There's some research done not too long ago about smoking, and they compared nicotine with heroin and found out that its addictive properties were just as bad as heroin. And that's one reason why so many people have a difficult time. So the best thing to do is never get started.
Do you know anything about herbal cigarettes that you can somehow sometimes see in grocery stores now, they report to have no nicotine in them.
I think this, all of this publicity and all of this thing about less nicotine cigarettes and this kind of thing is all missing the boat. Because no matter what cigarette you puff on, you're still exchanging carbon monoxide for oxygen. And number two, the carcinogenic or the chemical compounds that cause the cancer are associated with the paper and the burning of the paper as much as anything. So you're missing the boat by trying to switch to a different brand and hoping that you won't avoid the problems of cigarette smoking. The key thing is to quit it altogether. There's been a lot of research into what is the best way to quit smoking. Nothing has shown to be more advantageous. About 20% of people who attempt any program are successful in quitting smoking, whether it's going to the Seventh-day Adventist Stop Smoking Schools, those people who try to stop cold turkey, those people who get these filters and try and use the stronger filter over a period of time, or those people who try to smoke one less cigarette per day, 20% of people in each group will lose. And so what you want to do is just find the one that works for you. That's all. And keep struggling with it. Try to throw the hat.
I read this winter that the World Health Organization of the United Nations had a conference in Europe and talking about smoking, hoping to outlaw all advertising.
Mm-hmm. I'd love it.
Of any nature, but I wonder what kind of chance they would have against the cigarette lobbies and tremendous exposure of advertising.
About a $25 billion industry in the United States. We spend, I think it's $30 billion to research the effects of smoking, and we promote its sale in foreign countries with an expenditure of over $300 billion per year. So we're shipping out our disease to the other world. What's one of the first things that you notice after you arrive at the Holden and start this diet?
No dessert, no meat.
No what?
No dessert.
No desserts, okay.
No,
very
no
little meat.
No
not as much meat. I hear a lot of griping about that over there.
Not so much junk food.
No, not too much junk food.
French fries. Homemade bread.
Do you notice any effect on your body?
Suddenly you're very regular.
That's one of the best things I think that you'll notice after you've been here is that you suddenly became very, very regular.
Mitch, I thought that was because of the exercise.
No, it doesn't have anything to do with it. Now, our American diet has way too much salt, way too much sugar, way too much fat, and it's lacking in bran and in bulk. And this is all a problem with the processing of our foods nowadays. Salt, we have an extremely high level of high blood pressure in this country. Estimated to be 19 million Americans with high blood pressure, significant high blood pressure. Salt is a substance which the body regulates only after absorbing it and taking it in. And the body's way of handling salt is by increasing blood volume. In other words, it retains more fluid in order to hold the extra salt that it's brought in. And then the kidneys have to excrete both the fluid and the salt, or you have to get rid of the salt through natural processes like sweating and things. But increasing that blood volume raises the blood pressure. And that's one of the reasons why we have a high blood pressure rate in this country. So we've got to cut down on the salt in our diet. We have way too much refined sugars in our diet. We're talking about candy bars, our good old pop, and cookies, and cakes,
cereal,
pies, cereals which are covered with the stuff, the ice cream, all of these things here. Way too much sugar, and we should substitute natural sugars, because the body can assimilate and use the natural sugars
in honey.
Processes. Yeah, honey, excellent sugar.
Joe, can I just ask you, someone was saying at Easter time when I was at a house party that really honey and even raw sugar isn't really any better for you, like hardly any better for you. Is any sugar really, is honey good for you, or is it just not so bad for you?
Well, honey is a lot better for you than the refined sugar.
Yes, okay. I know that, but is it actually good for you, or is it just not?
Well, the body needs a certain amount of that kind of substance. You know, I mean, that comes under your carbohydrate hitting as far as you're thinking. And when we're talking about, probably your diet should have 50 to 60 to 70% carbohydrate of some kind in it, you know, and that honey contributes to part of it.
Sometimes I think that assertion is made relative to the dental effect, that honey is a bad or worse because it sticks to the teeth.
Don't the nutritionists argue against honey because it does trigger the pancreas to start belching out insulin to combat it, and it gives you the high and low effect?
I have never heard of that. No, never heard of that.
Well, I have three diabetics that work for me, and
diabetics have to really be aware of any sugar substance.
Well, that's why how I got onto it is when they take in the sugar, then your pancreas starts kicking out insulin.
That's right.
And then what happens? You go on a high and a low, because the insulin takes it down, and this is the reason you want to maintain a protein level, is that you don't get the high and the low.
Yeah. But that isn't speaking against honey per se. That's speaking of because of the rapid absorption of that kind of a sugar, like orange juice is bad for a diabetic to take, pops and any of these refined sugars, anything like that goes across the bloodstream quickly does give you a definite high in your blood sugar, which your pancreas has to respond to, or you have to tailor your insulin dose to. But the diabetics are a special case. You know, that's not saying that honey does the same thing for you, because it doesn't.
Does it work the same with hypoglycemia then, too?
Well, if you have a tendency towards hypoglycemia, what usually happens in hypoglycemia is you take on a sugar load, you get a real high, but then it goes too far down. Your pancreas responds by turning out a lot of insulin, which drops the level too quickly and to too low a level, and then you become symptomatic because of hypoglycemia, your blood count went too low. But for most of us who have a normal pancreas that can respond to this thing, we can handle honey. And if you're talking about quality of sugar intake, then honey is a lot better than the others around, that the more refined sugars. Now, the best thing, of course, is to get is not to use an extra amount of sweetening for anything. This is what I would say.
Well, your fruits are...
Use the natural sweetening of your fruits. When you're canning fruits, for instance, don't add extra sugar. Use the natural sweetening of your fruits.
Would you talk just a little bit about coffee and tea and milk and so forth?
Okay. Let's go on down through here and put that down here, coffee and tea.
One other thing on your... Is not the increase in the consumption of salt and sugar based on the fact that these substances are used in quick foods to preserve?
Yes, and to give them a lot of taste. And we, over the years in our American society, have become used to increasing amounts of salt and sugar to give our foods taste.
But they're also, beside all the preservatives they use, you take cold cereal that sits on the shelf in the supermarket for 6 months. You know, it scares me to death to think that I eat something that can sit on the shelf in a tepid room for 6 months. It can't possibly be too good for you.
Well, of course, then you're talking about all of the other chemical preservatives that they add to it. The
but a lot of them are now
all of those kind of
trying
things.
To get away from the chemistry and using sugar and salt.
Mm-hmm. What are those things do to you?
What, these chemicals?
Yeah.
Well, we're finding that they cause more and more problems. For instance, in things like the hyperactive child, there's a lot of research now that shows that these dyes and chemicals may act to trigger medical problems of that nature. There are a lot of other things. The caffeine, for instance, is a real trigger for a lot of people. And this is, you know, when we talk about tea and coffee, that's the thing. Some people can handle caffeine, some people can't. I don't prescribe for or against caffeine, but I ask people to be aware of how caffeine affects them. I can drink 10 cups of coffee a day and it doesn't bother me. I don't lose any sleep and it doesn't really affect me at all. I think, addicted to caffeine though, because if I get up in the morning and don't have a cup of coffee, like say before 10 o'clock, I feel like I get kind of a craving and feeling. I recognize that in me, but I don't have any deleterious effects. But some people are very sensitive to caffeine, and these people should try using products like Brim and Sanka and these kind of things where major amounts of caffeine, and I've seen people that couldn't even tolerate that level of it. And tea is higher in caffeine than coffee. Most people don't realize that.
I can't drink coffee at all, but I can drink tea just fine. Why is that? Coffee, like, it just really upsets my stomach. I can't even drink one cup of it.
I don't know. Must be something in the chemical composition of the difference in the two. I couldn't explain it. The next.
What about artificial sweeteners? See, my dad said that if we do a lot of stuff at home, like our canning and our freezing, we put in some recycling, we do it recycling. Which, what?
Artificial sweeteners are very important for diabetic people. And this is one of the reasons that a lot of people, the American Diabetic Association and many physicians are upset about the government removing cyclamates and such from the market based on what we think was insufficient scientific data to warrant taking them off of the market.
Do you think it's really bad for anybody else? Because, like, that's what we do every day with at home.
Well, I don't think it's bad for everybody else, but I wouldn't recommend the use of cyclamates for everybody. I think cyclamates are a chemical like a monosodium glutamate. And I think you're much better off to expose yourself to the least amount of chemicals in our society that you can get away with, because we don't know what the long-term effects are. And many things, 20 years down the line, turn out to have very disastrous effects on the body if they're taking significant amounts.
How is it possible that the government officials can do something like that when they know equally well that cigarettes and alcohol are 20 times as harmful and do nothing about that?
That's the paradox of modern society.
Money.
That's right.
It's lobbying.
That's right.
Government supports the tobacco industry.
Here, Mars bought second largest beer distribution, Miller. They bought Mission Viejo, I think $400 million. Now they're buying Mission Alessio next to it. Whole ranch, putting in homes that cost $100,000. They tried to buy Irvine for $430 million. Mm-hmm. Cash for all of them.
$25 billion industry in our society, and money really speaks.
Oh, man.
So much so that the government, the lobby, kept tobacco from being classified as either a food or a drug.
That's right.
So that neither.
So that the FDA would not have any power over it.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it could have been handled administratively.
The only way you're going to get this changed is to make your views known to your representatives, that you will not stand for this. And also, I think we've got to be more rigid about laws on secondhand smoke. The law, or the air should be pure, and if these people want to smoke cigarettes, let them go in their little closets and their little cubby holes and kill themselves, but don't expose all the rest of it.
They've gotten more brazen in California since they won the vote.
Mm-hmm.
We lost.
Let's take a look at fat. We talked about salt and sugar. Our American diet is way too high in fat. It used to be the big bogey was cow's milk was God's gift to man, and nowadays it's definitely not God's gift to man. We recommend that newborns be, if possible, fed on breast milk as long as possible, even up to 18 months of age to 2 years. And then if a mother doesn't want to feed her child breast milk, doesn't want to breastfeed, that she use formula and not cow's milk.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do start cow's milk after 1 year of age, we start it in 1% or 2% of skim milk and not whole milk.
How about adults?
About what?
Adults.
The same thing goes as far as I'm concerned for adults. There's no reason to be taking in whole milk. You're getting 17 times the amount of protein that you normally get in human breast milk, and you're getting a lot of fats byproducts that we know are not good for your health. And milk is the number one allergen in our society also. So, any other question on that?
Yeah, do you know anything about, I know that there's some kind of linkage between radioactivity and milk, how it's taken into cows and absorbed into the, I know that the people that make Hershey candy bars were upset because of what happened in Harrisburg.
Mm-hmm.
The milk would be endangered?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the cows, when they, you know, if they eat contaminated grass or whatever it is, they, you know, look at those poor people, where it was in Minnesota or Wisconsin, that had to kill off their dairy herds.
Michigan,
yeah. Because of their exposure to that contaminated feed. And just wiped them out. All of this stuff is coming through. And the other bad thing about, you want to think about it, is you as a breastfeeding mother are passing on any chemicals that you are taking into your child also. And this is why you've got to be very careful about drugs that you're taking at time when you're breastfeeding, about your diet and exposure. The other thing I wanted to say about fats was cholesterol. Cholesterol comes and goes in vogue all the time in medicine, but I still think it's very significant. For the first time in many, many years, there has actually been a documented drop in the death rate due to cardiovascular disease in the United States in men. And the only thing that we can pinpoint it to is exercise and to watching cholesterol in the diet. We don't know which one was more important, but we know that they're important. When I talked to you the other day about the money matters, I talked to you about preventative medical care, and I said at 25 years of age you should have your first complete physical examination with total blood work done, and part of that blood work that should be done nowadays is to look at cholesterol and triglycerides, and probably also look at whether you have high density cholesterol or low density cholesterol. You can have a normal cholesterol level but have a significant amount of low-density cholesterol, and that means that your chances of suffering heart attack are much higher than a person who has a significant amount of low-density cholesterol. Cigarette smoking does cause low-density cholesterol. Exercise leads to high-density cholesterol. So that's another breakthrough that's come through in the last few years in terms of pinpointing these fats and how they affect you.
I was going to ask about things like cottage cheese and things like that in relationship to fat.
Those are all milk products and all have to be avoided. The other thing is that we're talking about beef and pork, both of which are high in cholesterol, bacon, all of these kinds of foods. You should be trying to switch from that from part of your diet, not cut it out completely necessarily, but minimize it. And going more to the fish and poultry line, where you get much less of fat exposure.
Even cottage cheese, low fat?
No, low fat cottage cheese is had, you know, you're buying a special product there that's been. Somebody mentioned alcohol, and I wanted to mention alcohol. There's interesting studies on alcohol show that it's better to drink a little alcohol than it is not to drink a little alcohol. But we're talking about alcohol in moderation, and we're talking about we're talking about wine and beer and not hard liquor. And we're talking about a maximum of 2 beers three times a week, or or 2 glasses of wine per day. And they've shown that it's been shown mainly in men and studies that men who do drink a little bit for the digestive or for whatever reason.
Would you please clarify the size of the glass? On the wine?
Two thimbles,
okay.
Any questions on any of those things?
Just to get back to milk, can you say anything about yogurt?
Yogurt is what is it? It's a lactose process.
The problem with plain yogurt is pretty good, but the flavored yogurts are as bad as an ice cream sundae.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you put in the fruits that are not made of sugar,
I'm talking about commercial yogurt here. Yeah.
The my pet one is yogurt, plain yogurt, and then apricots that are not sweetened. And mix them up and it's delicious.
The sort of yogurt we have here isn't kind of so high in fashion.
I don't know, I haven't had any of your yogurt here. What is it? I don't know anything about it.
Plain.
Plain.
Homemade.
Plain homemade yogurt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The sort of yogurt we have here isn't kind of so high in fashion.
I don't know, I haven't had any of your yogurt here. What is it? I don't know anything about it.
Plain.
Plain. Homemade yogurt.
Yeah.
And can I ask that, this is out of interest, is goat's milk, because we have goat's milk yogurt and goat's milk at home, is that kind of better for you?
It's better for you than cow's milk.
Why is that?
Less protein content, so, and less allergenic. We treat children who can't tolerate milk protein of any form, usually use goat's milk for them with a lot of success.
What, can you expand on that? You said milk was the number one allergenic.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
The number one allergenic food substance in the United States. Usually what's happened, we think, in the past is that children have been exposed to cow's milk at too early in their life, and they were not what we would call immunologically ready to be exposed to the proteins in the milk, and their body therefore developed an antibody against it, and so then they have the whole process then of the allergy reaction that they gradually develop. You'd be surprised how many kids I have to limit milk in as part of my practice every year.
Well, does this make it seem like they have a cold?
Yeah, they have a continuous cold. It's a very frequent symptom. They have skin rashes, all kinds of things. Digestive problems.
If you take them off the milk that they're currently drinking, might go away then?
Yeah, but you got to remember that it takes 6 weeks to eliminate all milk protein from the body. And it's extremely difficult to follow a milk-free diet. If you look at every processed food that you buy, and you'll find it has some type of milk protein in most of them. So it's very difficult to follow a totally milk-free diet. But usually it doesn't have to be entirely or totally free in order to be free of the symptoms. If you'll just minimize the amount of milk protein, usually that will be enough to alleviate symptoms.
Do you prescribe stuff like powdered milk then to take the place of, milk or just no milk?
No milk whatsoever, because powdered milk basically is dehydrated milk, most forms of. And there are products on the market like soybean milk, producing soybean, which you can substitute for it, a lot of products.
Yeah, like
you really don't need milk. When my mother took me off the breast, I never drank milk after that. The only milk I ever have is on my cereal, and that's the only milk that I ever get. You very well substitute the natural juices and water for any milk in your diet, and you'll never miss it.
How about eggs and cholesterol?
The egg yolk is the highest source of cholesterol in the diet, in the American diet. 400 milligrams in each egg, and you should have no more than 800 milligrams of cholesterol in a week's time. So you should have no more than 2 to 3 eggs a week. And that accounts for the eggs that your wife uses in cooking those cakes and whatever else you think for you. French toast and all those good things.
Well, milk lobby is a powerful one too.
Mm-hmm. Very, very much so.
Lennon Smith said that practically every kid with 2 beer is in the case of milk allergy. Would you go that far?
No, I wouldn't go that far, but there are an awful lot of them could be related to that. Mm-hmm.
What part of that is each individual metabolism play in all this? Each body is different, and it is so obvious that a lot of others have a hard time, for example, keeping their weight down, while others are, you know, can't gain weight to their soul.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to be more being burned. So how is it possible to know one's body better in that sense? So what clues does one
have? Well, probably. The thing that I want to stimulate you to do is, like I said, I want you to be aware of your physiologic age. And how can you be aware of what your physiologic age is? You've got to measure yourself against certain parameters. And, I'm that kind of a person. I can eat and eat and eat, and I burn it as fast as I take it in. And so weight, in the parameter of weight, of maintaining normal body weight, I'm excellent at that point. But I need to do the extra step and measure my blood fat. And at one time, my blood fats were elevated. So I went on a diet of much less fat in my diet, much less eggs, all of this. And my cholesterol now, I maintain it about 175. You want to maintain your cholesterol. The recommended American Heart Association recommendations are less than 200. And if you're above 200, you should be following a diet. And if you're above 300 to 400, you possibly should be on some medication for lowering your cholesterol.
So I guess I had a conversation once with a heart surgeon. I just asked him what was the one thing I could do to avoid it. He told me to choose my parents.
Well, okay, but you can't do that, can you?
No, that's not the one.
I'm trying to talk to you about the things that you do have a visible choice on. Okay, and there's no way that you can choose your parents.
Do you care to discuss the merits of a Weight Watcher program? I mean, the Weight Watchers program and their diet that they recommend.
Okay, we'll go off the diet. Let me talk first about bran and bulk. Bran is a very important substance in the diet. We don't understand quite how it works, but if you have sufficient bran in your diet, it has a direct effect on peristaltic action of the bowel. Actual study was done comparing transit time of food in Africa versus typical American. If you give an African who normally eats a high bran diet a radioactive labeled food, he will pass it completely through his body and come out the other end in 6 hours. The average in this country is around 6 days. Bulk is another constituent that's really needed in the diet for softening of the stool and for proper bowel action. We have the most common cancer in the United States nowadays is cancer of the colon, the large bowel, and the reason it's number one is because both men and women are suffering it in tremendous amounts. Cancer of the colon is unheard of in Africa, and yet we are one of the highest rates in the world. And that's partly because of our super processed foods, the fact that we've extracted bran, and we don't eat a lot of the bulk foods. And that's why I'm saying that's number one, one of the main reasons why I'm saying the diet of Holden here is so, that's such a good diet.
Bulk is, for example,
All of the salad type foods that we eat here, the vegetables and salads, man, you're talking about.
That'd be raw vegetables mostly, wouldn't it be?
Raw vegetables are better quality, definitely. But the good soup that we had today for lunch is still a fair amount of bulk there.
What is bran? Is it the outside hall of wheat?
Yes. What you want to be shopping for is high quality bran, and you'll find that the dry cereals that are cheapest are usually the highest quality bran ones. We're talking about bran flakes, Wheaties, all bran. If you don't particularly like to eat those, when they process and make white flour, they substitute the bran, or they separate the bran from the white, from the flour, and then the natural food stores buy up this bran and get it in these big bags, and you can go in there and buy it. Get a great big bag for about $2 of it, and you can just, it has little to no taste, and you can take a tablespoon of it and put it in milk or juice or coffee or whatever you want to, or sprinkle it on your food, whatever you want to do with it, and that'll get plenty of bran right there. But also eating your whole wheat bread and all of the brands, all of the breads that we eat here are high in bran. And bran muffins that they make here, all of this stuff is excellent.
Rice also has bran. Well, all of your grains do, but
How about polished rice?
Polished rice is what has that's the bran removed.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Brown rice is.
Where did they get the ingredients for granola? Here? They got wheat or something.
They got rolled oats. They got rolled oats and a lot of other things in that granola, and that's excellent quality there. Food.
John, she asked about Weight Watchers, but before you get to that, could you just say, give us some more incentive by talking a little bit about the effect of our nutrition, current nutrition as a society on third world nations, that it's not just affecting us, but it's affecting them, and could you explain a little bit about that?
Why don't you do it? I don't know, I'm not thinking right along your lines right now.
Well, Americans, by demanding that we have especially things like sugar, things like coffee and tea, which we do not need in our diet and which are making us unsound nutritionally, are affecting the countries that we are forcing to grow these things for. Because they are having to, for economic reasons, and to meet our demands, turn more and more of their land over to the growing of sugar, of coffee, and so on, and not then growing the crops and the foods that they need to satisfy their own nutrition. So we are suffering, and they are suffering, and we don't even most of the time realize that that our suffering is going beyond us, but it is. It's affecting the whole world.
A good example of that in National Geographic not too long ago, reading about one of the South American countries, which the government was decreeing that they put more and more production into the coffee bean, and that the people were starving, the significant numbers of people were starving in that country, and they were not producing enough food within the country to sustain the people that they had there, and they weren't, of course, importing it to take care of it either. And the wealthy people and the government was promoting the export of coffee for the profits that it would bring, you know, for those particular areas.
Also, I think the whole notion of eating lower on the food chain, I think I've heard that as much grain as we take to raise beef to feed 100 people, that same grain could probably feed several thousand people worldwide over the same span. And yet, the beef lobby, again, is incredible, and the support for beef prices. All bad things seem to get good support.
The average American male is 20 to 30 pounds overweight for height. The average American female is 15 to 25 pounds overweight. We're talking about the average American. So obesity is a significant problem in our society, and we've got to do something about it in terms of your health habit, if you're one of those people that's bitten into that. I was asked about Weight Watchers. I think Weight Watchers is an excellent diet in terms of having all of the vitamins and substances you need. And it is usually successful. My only gripe about it is it's an expensive diet, and a lot of people can't afford to really follow it for a long period of time. The other thing I don't like about it is that you're changing your basic dietary habits. And when I prescribe a diet, I basically prescribe what we call a calorie diet. I want you to eat the foods that you normally eat, because I think then you're more likely to sustain your diet and follow it. And I want to teach you how to eat it in proper amounts. And then I want to also stimulate you to take up exercise so you burn more and more calories while you're cutting down on the number of calories that you take in per day. therefore lose your weight, benefiting you in many areas. So that's my basic philosophy on diet.
It's been found too that their diet is too high in salt for several reasons. One, that they're encouraging people to take a lot of non-caloric pop,
mm-hmm.
and they use a lot of celery and other foods that have
mm-hmm.
a lot of salt in. So that portion of it isn't good.
So I don't prescribe anything but a calorie diet, and there are all kinds of fad diets. The Jackie Gleason diet. Okay, what's the next subject you want to talk about? Is anything more on this?
Going back any of the
times that unrest. Top or bottom rest.
Can I add one more thing on nutrition before we go to that, on vitamins? Do you recommend taking vitamins, or what's your opinion on that?
The vitamin industry is another one of those big money lobby industries in the United States, and vitamins, we were talking about the fact that the cigarettes were kept out of the nutritional and drug thing because of that, and vitamins were the same thing. They lobbied in Congress, and Congress exempted them from the jurisdiction of the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, for the same reason. Vitamins presently are only recommended for children up to age one, and I'm talking about normal, healthy people now. Children up to age one, and for elderly people who are not on good diet. If the rest of us, all the rest of us who are eating a normal American diet, are taking in more vitamins than our body can retain. And the only thing that we're doing by taking, what I tell people when they want to take vitamins is, if you want to enrich your stool, that's fine. But you don't need to do that much.
Is that necessarily true, though? Now, from a nutritionist point of view, if you log everything you eat over a period of time, and then you take it to a nutritional chart, and you measure your minimum daily requirements, there are a lot of things that we can't get in the Big Macs and the shakes and all this that the average American is consuming. Aren't there some things that we're not getting enough of?
Not to, not with my understanding.
My concern is a similar thing. Like at school, eating institutional food, a lot of canned vegetables, cooked things. That's where I was concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't, I mean.
Well, again, this depends on the quality of the food that you're taking in. You know, like I say, the Holden diet that you and I are eating at this particular point has all the vitamins in it that we could possibly assimilate. Mm-hmm.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with that, but you're talking about.
But I'm talking about that kind of thing. If people are don't have poor dietary habits, they definitely do have. You know,
I mean,
they probably are not.
A lot of kids are raised on cold cereals, and like most medical journals say, you grind up the carton and pour milk over it, and you got a better diet than the stuff.
that's true. They're talking about selective. They're talking about selective cereal. They're not talking about all cereal.
No, no, I agree. But I mean, if you take like a significant portion of it, that's true. You can grind up the carton.
Oh, that's right. I agree. Yeah. This all comes into our poor, our processed foods and what we're selling our people.
Well, the thing amazed me. I was reading one day about ice cream, and if you read the ingredients, there isn't anything in it but chemistry, basically.
That's right. Yeah.
Tremendous.
But it's pretty hard to eat. You know, I'll tell you where I used to see vitamin deficiency problem was when I was, of course, in my medical training and in the slum area. And you know, when you're seeing people that are that poor and with the limited diet that they have, they definitely are vitamin deficient. But the typical middle class American family is probably getting most of their vitamins. You know, if you're letting your kid get away with eating various selection of food and not having a whole range of the recommended diet, well, then he is probably deficient in some areas. What I'm trying to address the problem is that I don't feel every American should be on vitamins, because we don't need it, and we're making
Well, I would agree with you there.
Most people are wasting their money.
The explosion of fast food restaurants is just unbelievable in this country, and everything's deep fried and thrown together, and I just can't believe
it. But you mentioned the Big Mac, for instance, and there was a recent article in Consumer's Guide by some nutritionists from Harvard where they took a Big Mac and did a whole chemical analysis of it, and their conclusion was that a single Big Mac with a glass of milk was a nutritious diet.
See, but this is what bothers me personally. Okay, what you just said is true, except the hamburger is 37% fat,
well,
and you were talking about the milk.
That's right. Yeah,
so
I know.
It's caught between a rock and a hard spot.
Yeah, but they're talking, you know, they would say that that was would be a good diet to have three meals a day or anything like that. But
what gets me is you see people who will go there for lunch, but then they go to the Pizza Hut for dinner.
Yeah.
And right. So you got yourself, you're in a real dilemma if you really sit down and analyze.
That's right.
Day by day and a full week's diet, you're in trouble.
That's right.
Now,
taking some vitamins isn't going to cure it all either.
Well, it's not going to cure it all, but I'm sure it's just to a degree, I would think. Now, it's true, what we have here at Holden is super. Because we're eating basic foods and they're not loaded.
That's right.
But
and
how
a lot of people that process.
Where you have two people working in a family are eating like we're eating at home. Very few of us.
The
Pillsbury Company in Minneapolis has recently done a lot of research on some of these fast foods, and it was surprising how, as far as vitamins go, now I'm not talking about whether you're eating too much fat or, you know, the wrong thing. But as far as vitamins go, they found that in almost every case, when you looked at the diets of kids that are out eating so-called junk foods, that they have ended up getting enough vitamins. And about the only time that they said that anybody needed vitamins were is if a patient was on an 800 calorie diet, for instance, where they obviously weren't getting enough.
On a starvation diet,
yeah.
Kind of situation.
John, aren't we also the highest urinating protein nation in the world?
Mm-hmm.
We eat 6 ounces a day, or what? But that much protein.
Is the recommended?
Yeah.
Thing? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our what is it? What
measured say? In grams.
Grams.
Yeah.
Would depend on what the ounces are.
Yeah. We're talking about we want high quality protein. As opposed to low quality, and we need more protein and more carbohydrate and less fat.
When you put down milk, you know, that's kind of hard to take for people who've been used to milk as the perfect food type
mm-hmm.
thing.
Well, it isn't all milk. I mean, 1% and 2% milk
are better.
Yeah, but you're saying you don't need any milk.
Yeah, I'm
and
saying
I know
people.
My pediatrician said the same thing about my in relation to our children.
Mm-hmm.
Is the assumption then that the protein adequate is that the protein income is adequate from other sources?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, milk is a source of protein, but it's also a source of fat.
But if you use the non-fat milk, is the protein still desirable? If
yeah,
you don't
it's
have
good.
Allergies.
That's good quality protein, providing you don't have milk allergy problems that you're facing.
What about the vitamin D? Where do you get that in huge quantities comparable to what you get in milk?
In
milk.
Some of your vegetables. If fresh vegetables would be one source.
I can't think of any of them. What's high
in
vitamin D?
You need carrots? Carrots, for instance?
No, they're predominantly A. All the yellow vegetables like squash and carrots and things of that nature are predominantly A. It's where your source of A comes from. They're not, I don't believe they're high in D.
Well, and milk has been enriched with so much.
Yeah, well, milk, we have a lot of enriched products. Our bread is enriched with vitamins. Milk is enriched, our salt has got iodine added to it, you know, all of these kind of things.
Yeah, with some of those so-called enriched foods, they had to put back in some things to make up for what they took out of them in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they're not really enriched as we think they are.
Mm-hmm. But you really don't need milk to get your vitamin, adequate amounts of vitamin D. Let's take a look at proper rest here for just a minute. And this is a, this is a variable according to the individual. The recommended, of course, thing is 8 hours, around 8 hours, but many people get by in 4 to 6 hours adequately. Some people require a little bit more than that.
Well, why I asked about this, my mother's Carol, I mean, if you're getting sick, you have been having your meds. Et cetera, and that's why I asked.
When you are sick, you need more rest to allow the reparative functions of the body.
Yeah, but I mean, just like, you know, staying up till 2:30, 3:30 in the morning, but then I get up at 10. What's the difference on when your hours are
sleeping? No difference. Does improper rest make you sick more often?
Yeah.
That's what your mother said.
Also, full time, final
time,
things like that. Mm-hmm. Does that make anything on your body? I mean,
mm-hmm.
Does that wear your body down
mm-hmm.
those late hours?
Sure does. It takes a while to recuperate, doesn't it, after final time when you really burn the cane with both ends? Mm-hmm. And you're tired or you need more rest. You can't exercise as vigorously.
Stress.
Yeah, Terry?
I heard that. You really only need 2 hours of sleep a night, because there's like 4 hours of four levels of sleep.
Okay.
And this person was telling me that your body usually takes 3 hours to get down into what they call a deep sleep, or the real
called REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep.
The real relaxing sleep. And that your body usually sleeps in that level 2 hours, and then takes 3 hours to get out again. And then if you can just go into that, like this person hypnotizes himself to sleep and goes down in 10 seconds. I can't believe he does, but, and then sleeps for 2 hours and comes back out in 10 seconds and completely refreshed. 2 hours a night. Can't believe it. Does that really work? I mean,
it sounds feasible if he can do that, but most of us can't do that.
Is that true though?
Yeah, your best rest comes during the REM sleep period of time. You know.
Isn't that dreaming?
The rapid eye movement. Huh?
Is that dreaming
too?
When you're dreaming?
I think it is, yeah.
And also, what about meditation as far as meeting like rest requirements and stuff?
It does meet some requirements, but it can't take the place of good old sleep.
Mm-hmm. Can it reduce your need for sleep?
Mm-hmm.
Practically speaking, does the hour nap right before supper or whatever when you get home from the office do anything for you?
Sure.
Is that, I mean, given that it's not deep sleep, but you're still out,
mm-hmm.
helpful?
Or 15 minutes during lunch hour or any of these kind of things ought to all help.
Then why is it though when you catch that half hour at 4:30 to 5 and then go off to supper, you often feel worse since you hadn't laid down at all? What is there, I mean, is that mental or is there some...
Well, it's just that you're coming back, you know.
Everything's been slowed down.
Mm-hmm. I think you'd benefit more from an exercise program at that particular time.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Most of us come home from work and we're exhausted, and we think, you know, we couldn't possibly go out and exercise. If you go out and exercise, you feel fairly refreshed after you finish the exercise thing, and you feel, this is the way I feel. I exercise at between 5 and 6 o'clock, and shower and get home by 7. And I'm good till 11 or 12, whatever that night, you know. And I'm up 5:30, 6 the next morning, and gone.
John, can I have a sentence when I get home? This business of the hours you have before midnight, does that mean anything? It doesn't. Does
the
it?
What? What's that?
Well, my mum always says to me, sleep you get before midnight, that's better than sleep you get after midnight.
Yes, that's what my mother said. 1 hour before midnight
is
2 hours.
Yeah. Is that right?
Huh.
What were
the
people the other night? It's 10:55. I think we'll shut it off. I need to go to bed too. I'll see you out there jogging tomorrow morning.